So anyway, Mary, what direction do you want to take the holistic discussion in?
Well, I'd kind of like to get started with it, but I'm trying to see who's interested on here in getting started. I thought maybe we could just talk about what we use and what we don't use and what we're interested in trying and our experiences with it, and just you know, wherever it leads is fine.
Speaking of holistic related things, Mary, the EFT material is extremely good. Extremely good. I don't know if that qualifies as holistic. Actually, it does, because it addresses a number of different issues than just physical issues. Very, very good material, and he is a superb speaker. It sort of gets you laughing and crying at the same time.
Well, it's, yeah, isn't this just amazing, all the stuff that it can do? I mean, that's what amazes me about that, is it's such a simple process, and it's something you can just do any time. I mean, even if you're lying in bed, you can do it if you can't sleep or something, and it may not always work, but at least it'll relax you enough, and it's just amazing.
Maybe I should think of something like that, because I can't sleep.
Yeah, we noticed that, Riz. No, I'm just teasing you.
Try a hammer, Riz.
Oh, been there, done that.
You know what's amazing about Riz is we get on this chat thing at like 7 or what is it, about 6 or something like that, and we all start teasing him about when to go to bed, you know, because you know that it's got to be at least 9 hours difference between the West Coast and Britain. And he just keeps saying, no, this is addictive, you know, and finally he goes to bed at about 3:30 his time, then he gets up the next morning and goes to work. Can you believe that?
I used to be able to do that when I was 20.
I can still do it. Give me 4 hours over 7 any day. Sleep's overrated.
Hope's in here. Hi, Hope.
Hi, everyone. I didn't want to say anything until, you know, there was a gap, so hello, everybody.
Hi.
You know what? It looks like we've got somebody named Marla in here, and Megan's in here, or Megan. Sorry about that.
Hi, everyone.
Well, I guess what we could do is just start out by talking about your experiences with this kind of stuff and what you like and what works and what doesn't work. And by the way, Hope, we're all thinking of you. I know it's not an easy time for you, but I hope you're doing okay.
Thank you. Thank you to you all. I'm just now getting back to my computer, so I've only just recently been able to check my mail. So I want to thank all of you that wrote me messages. That was really, really kind. And actually very, I don't know, it's unexpected in a really good way. So thank you.
I would remind everyone to be sure you're nice and close to your microphones so that everybody can hear you well.
Is this good enough for you?
Yeah, that's real good. I'm also recording this for anybody who wants to know. And if you don't want it to be recorded, then I can turn off the recording and throw the file away.
Well, it isn't as though it's not a public forum. Recording is just fine, Mary.
Yeah, you record away, Mary. I don't know quite how much sense you'll get out of everybody, but doubtless you'll get less out of me.
You know what, Hope? There was one thing I was going to ask you, and I keep forgetting. You mentioned in one of your very first notes about power dreams. Are those bars or cookies or what? I mean, because I've been looking for them in just about every place I can look, and I found power, performance, and any other kind of power bars, but I couldn't find power dreams. Are they made by Power Bar?
No, actually, they are, they're not a cookie or anything, they're a drink, and I think they're made, I know you can get them at Shop Natural, and you can get them at Imagine Foods, and you can get them in a lot of your supermarkets. They're just soy milk, but they're chocolate, and they're delicious.
No, Mary, a power dream is when you stick your finger in the electrical socket before you go to sleep.
Yeah, I think that would turn on the power dream sequence. That's a good one. I didn't know that was a drink. I was looking in the wrong section.
That's totally turned something on. I don't know. I think it definitely did something to your hair, too.
So how many people have had experience with homeopathy?
Well, I haven't really. Just the Bach remedies is all. But I think somebody sent me a free sample of some flu and virus thing once, which had little tiny tablets that tasted like sugar, and you just put one of them on your tongue if you got sick. It didn't seem to work or something. I don't know if I was just not doing it right or what.
Homeopathic remedies are usually dispensed as little tiny lactose pellets that have been dosed with a liquid that has been diluted and energized numerous times. So yeah, they would be little sugar pellets like that. And what they probably sent you is a remedy called Ascylococcinum, which is good for flus, but only for certain kinds of flus.
Okay, and then the idea is you just take one or two of them at a time every once in a while, or what?
Well, the best thing to do is dissolve one in a spoonful of water or a couple of spoonfuls of water and then sip that over the space of about a half hour. The instructions will tell you to take a whole bunch of them, but like one a day is all that's needed, maybe twice a day is all that's needed. And if it doesn't have an effect within two doses, it's not going to have an effect at all. Homeopathy usually works pretty quickly. There are, probably 300 different homeopathic remedies that would work for colds and flu. It all depends on the symptom picture.
Didn't I read that the royal family in England uses homeopathy, and they have been for something like 300 years?
Well, they do use it, as a matter of fact. It's much bigger in the UK than it is here in the States. But nobody's been using it for 300 years because it's only been around for about 200.
Yeah, homeopathy, I can't even say it, is really big here in the UK for some funny reason. But then all sorts of alternative medicines are.
Yeah, are we going to discuss other supplements and nutrition areas?
Yeah, if you want to.
I mean, I didn't know if it was limited to homeopathy.
No, I just brought that up because nobody was saying anything.
Yeah, this is pretty casual. Just, you know, mention whatever you want to.
I went with a friend to the nutritionist at the a major cancer center here in our state. And it was very interesting because she said that, you know, you can purchase all the supplements or vitamins that you want to purchase. But she felt that for people who were trying to eat in a healthy fashion, that she recommended, obviously for women, calcium and vitamin D because of osteoporosis. But she's also saying a very good multivitamin. And then she was really advocating the use of fish and fish oil, taking a fish oil supplement. And she used the acronym SMASH, which I never heard of. And she said, when you're picking fish to eat, and SMASH, I think I can get this, SMASH stands for salmon, mackerel, albacore tuna, sardines, and herring. And those are the supposedly the best fish you can eat for the proper oils. I can probably hack all of them except sardines.
Interestingly enough, the omega-3 oils that those fish contain are also found in grass-fed beef, but not in the grain-fed and grain-finished beef that we get in the supermarkets and most butcher shops. Those have omega-6 fatty acids, which aren't anywhere near as useful as the omega-3s.
That's interesting to know.
Yeah, I take a whitefish supplement, which is supposed to have a lot of omega-3 stuff in it, plus immune system stuff, and I think that is really necessary, you know, if you don't eat enough fish. But that's a real interesting idea. It's funny, too, because they didn't really know that much about omega-3s years ago, and then just in the last 10 years, it's really gotten popular.
Another thing that's getting popular here are teas and coffees with the Japanese reishi mushrooms.
Yeah, y'all can keep those. I don't like the taste.
Yeah, I don't like them either. But I've heard that green tea is one of the best things you can have, too. And there's different brands, I guess, that have slightly different flavors.
Green tea is extremely healthful. I brew a pot a day, sometimes even more. The coffeebeandirect.com website has several different kinds of green tea in 2-pound bags for a better price than anybody on the web. And it's very good quality tea.
What, coffeebean.com sells tea? Isn't that a contradiction?
No, it's just the name of the website.
Do they sell that loose, or do they sell it in bags, or just in different forms, or what?
It comes in 2-pound bags. They're hermetically sealed up, and I open them up and then put them in mason jars and then draw a vacuum on them with the vacuum machine so that it keeps it good and fresh.
Do they have chocolate? I think we all need to know.
No, Mary, they don't have chocolate. They don't have chocolate, but my local supermarket now has Lindt Excellence 85% chocolate bars. Talk about a natural remedy. That's a good one.
Wow, well, they don't have chocolate. Well, I think they need to go back to the drawing board.
So, Hope, what have you gotten from the shopnatural.com? Looks like a really neat site.
Hope seems to be gone. I don't see her on the tree view.
Her connection actually died, so that's why she's not here anymore.
Yeah, she's had a really hard time with connections and stuff this week. How aggravating. Good grief.
Probably the best place on the web that I have found for getting supplements at decent prices is iHerb.com. Very, very good prices on almost anything you can imagine in the way of supplements, vitamins, minerals, etc., etc.
That's a really interesting. I'll have to try that one. I think we're all going to probably go over there and look after this chat's over with.
I get my alpha lipoic acid from them. Unfortunately, they don't carry the Chinese herbs that I use to keep the blood sugar in check. I have to get those from another place.
Do they have stuff like juices and things like that?
No. That's not their thing. I don't buy juices over the web because, well, two reasons. One, I don't believe in juices, and two, it's expensive to ship.
What sort of herbs do you use for checking blood sugar? I'm not diabetic, but I have a friend who's diabetic.
It can depend on your constitution. A Chinese herbalist can recommend one of two or three different herbs for diabetes. The one that I use is called Romania 16. It's a mixture of 16 herbs, with the predominant one being the Chinese herb Romania. I get them from ChineseHerbs.net, and they have done a marvelous job for me. However, I wouldn't tell another person to take them without consulting a Chinese traditional medicine practitioner, because sometimes, depending whether you're yin or yang prominent, etc., it can vary as to what you need. So it's sort of like homeopathy. You have to go with the right one for you. But they sure have worked for me.
You see a big change in your monitoring when you take them?
Oh, night and day. Yes, absolutely.
Do you still have to take insulin in addition to your herbal stuff?
No, I don't take insulin at all. I'm not a type 1. And some type 2s also do use insulin, but no, I never have. No, I do take metformin along with that. I'm hoping that someday I can get off of that too, because that's just, I don't like drugs.
I think one of the hardest things that you run into with that is I know a number of diabetics, and they're always talking about how they've got to have four shots a day, and it's, if they don't do it right and they don't really monitor their sugar and all that, then they just have problems and stuff, and you know, you try to tell them that there's other ways of doing things and they don't want to hear it. So I just, you know, keep thinking positive thoughts at them and maybe that'll work.
There's a lot of resistance in the diabetic community against using any alternative medical forms at all, and that has basically been engendered by the American Diabetes Association, which my wife and I call the American Death Association, because if you follow their dietary recommendations and their other recommendations, it's a sure way to die young or to go blind, which I guess is not our concern, or to lose kidneys and livers and feet and fingers and all sorts of things. No, there's much better ways to handle diabetes than what most doctors will tell a diabetic.
Do you mean that you feel in the diet that it's too much protein and that's the kidney problem, or are you talking about something else?
Well, a kidney problem can develop from too much protein, but usually that's not the case. Usually a kidney problem develops in a diabetic from the effect of the lack of balance between the insulin and glucagon and the carbohydrate metabolism that isn't working properly. Too many carbs are deadly for a diabetic. A person actually doesn't need carbohydrates to live at all. Most of us get them, and they aren't deadly for most of us. However, type 1 diabetics would be best off to have no carbohydrates unless they have compromised kidneys to start with.
But for the type 2s, what are you considering deadly about the American Diabetes Association diet? I'm just curious.
Well, I don't want to usurp all of Mary's time here. No, the ADA diet recommends 200 to 220 grams of carbohydrates a day for type 2s, and that's a crock of fertilizer. They should have probably 10 to 20% that amount, depending on how stable their blood sugars are. Carbohydrates are not the proper food for type 2 diabetics in general. I mean, there are exceptions, and the more exercise you get, the more carbohydrates you can use, and your body will, you know, use them correctly. But generally speaking, most carbohydrate-rich foods should be avoided by type 2s, and we're talking grains, pasta, rice, potatoes, all the comfort foods.
The problem with something like that is when you eliminate all the comfort foods, what's left to eat? I guess fresh fruit and vegetables, right? Or some vegetables.
And meat, a lot of protein. Yeah, I mean, most of the diabetics I know try to cut their carbs a lot, but most of the diabetics that I've seen can't cut them out totally.
Well, Mary, I hope you never become a diabetic, because I know you're a vegetarian, and that's a very, very tough road to hoe. I eat a lot of meat, cheese, some dairy products, but the ones that are low in carbohydrates, and yeah, vegetables, not fruits. Fruits sort of are not good for diabetics. Some fruits, some of the time, mostly berries, but most of the fruits, no, you don't want them in any quantity at all, because eating fruits is like mainlining sugar.
Yeah, that makes sense now I think about it, because a lot of the fruits do have, sugar in them and stuff. But yeah, I do eat a lot of dairy, and I get kind of concerned about it. I guess it's sort of a tendency of some vegetarians to do that, because you're thinking, well, you know, you're cutting out on the meat and stuff. You do have to have protein, but then we don't really need that much protein, from what I've heard.
30 grams a day of protein is really sufficient, unless you're into major muscle mass building and stuff.
It sounds like the diet that you're mentioning would certainly help people lose a lot of weight, whether or not they wanted to. Because if you're cutting out a lot of carbs and you're, well, I don't know. If you eat meat, then that would help to keep the weight on, I guess. But it just sounded like it was so eliminative as far as what you could eat and what you couldn't. But, yeah, if you eat meat, that ought to do it. At least you get your protein and some of the other stuff that's in meat.
One of the dangers of the low-carb diet is that it can be very calorically dense. Fat has 9 calories per gram. Protein and carbohydrates each have 4 calories per gram. So when a person cuts out carbs, if they're keeping the same mass of food and simply replacing the carbs with fat and protein, especially if they replace it with fat, they're actually getting a lot more calories than they were with carbs. So it's you don't just make direct switches and then pay no attention to it. Any kind of diet at all requires learning and paying attention.
But they will go in, even eating the meat, Mary, as one of the proteins. If you cut the carbs drastically, for instance, as the Atkins diet proposes, and you cut the carbs, even eating the meat, you will go into ketosis, and you will lose weight because of that. I did the Atkins diet, and you can lose a lot of weight, and you can lose it very quickly. You really should be monitored by a doctor, though, whether you're cutting carbs for Atkins or diabetes or whatever you're cutting them for, because of the meat and cheese intake and the emphasis on protein via eggs and other things. Although I did lose a lot of weight, I got very scared and got off, because my cholesterol was okay. It went up just a little bit, but my triglycerides tripled on it, and I found that pretty dangerous.
That can be one of the problems, Judy, is that a lot of times people who replace the carbs with too much meat or too much fatty meat do see a triglyceride increase. The one thing I would note there is that there isn't any solid evidence that indicates that elevated triglyceride levels are dangerous. Most of the evidence that is cited for that is from such shoddy quality research that it wouldn't pass muster in a high school chem lab.
I wouldn't have worried if they had, you know, gone up. I might not have even gotten really upset if they'd, you know, gone up half as much, but to have them triple was pretty alarming.
I can understand that you were concerned about your triglycerides tripling on Atkins. That's a little unusual. A small percentage of the population does have some predisposition to high triglyceride and others with for high cholesterol numbers. And so sometimes switching to an Atkins-style diet can cause them problems. What I'm curious about is, if you don't mind my asking, were you able to keep the weight off that you took off with Atkins?
Yeah, I was. And I was, you know, until I stopped and started cutting down on the meat and adding a few carbs back, yeah, I was able to keep it off as long as I stayed on the diet, but the lab chemistry kept getting so strange that I really was concerned about my safety if I stayed on it.
I can understand that. That does make sense. A lot of diabetics follow a diet even more rigid than Atkins, designed by one of the leading diabetologists in the country named Richard Bernstein. He's a physician out of New York State. And his diet is quite rigid. In fact, it's no fun at all. But if you are not predisposed to elevated cholesterol and triglyceride levels, his diet for some diabetics is a real lifesaver.
Yeah, and some people have said there are things to bring triglycerides down, like niacin and other things, and sometimes they work for people and sometimes they don't.
That's one of the points about alternative therapies that one must always keep in mind. Supplements of various kinds, homeopathy, acupuncture, etc., etc., they don't work for everyone. Of course, Western medicine doesn't work for everyone either, even though the doctors would like you to think so. But one of the pluses about alternative therapies is that there are so many. One of the minuses is that they don't all work for everyone. And so sometimes you have to go through several different modalities before you find the one that is really going to work for whatever your particular presenting symptoms are.
I think one of the hard parts about doing alternative therapies is actually just finding the stuff that works for you, because so many people you talk to are so convinced that their way is the right way, and you just try their method and it either works or it doesn't, and then you find something looks better. And then there's the other problem of people charging outrageous amounts of money to get this whatever information they think is valuable, and then, you know, it's you end up just not getting what you thought you were going to be paying them to obtain or learn or whatever. I've learned that a couple of different times, and man, it's really surprising.
Then, of course, there's the issue of dealing with the regular allopathic medical community, who just absolutely go ballistic if you try and do anything regarding tending to your own health and taking care of yourself. And they can waste your money too, in a grand way.
I think one of the things you're doing now, that maybe you've noticed this, you guys, that they're suggesting that somebody is having a study at some university or other in whatever area you happen to live in, and they're looking for participants, and actually what I think they're looking for is people to try out new experimental drugs or medications. And they say, oh, we'll provide the exam, and we'll provide the drugs and the things that you're going to need, and we'll monitor you and all this. But it just makes me nervous to see that, because they try to make it so tempting, but it just looks like they're using people as guinea pigs.
Well, they are. There are several companies in our town, because we have a big scientific community here, who are companies, their job is testing, and they do advertisements on television. They get people in, and not only will they give you the drugs and the exams, but for some of the studies, they pay you, you know, $300 or $400 a month, but God knows what you're putting into your body, because they don't really tell you.
And I think that's got to be one of the scariest things that's going on with all of this, is that they have no information. You try to find out what it is, and they won't say anything.
And then more often than not, they want you to sign a form that says you won't hold them responsible if something goes wrong. Of course, that doesn't have any legal efficacy, but they intimidate people into thinking that it does.
Even some of the holistic practices I've run into recently, they usually have a disclosure form that says, don't tell anybody about this, and it turns out that it's really not any big deal, that you can get the information somewhere else quite easily.
And that's so much bunk, too. The disclosure form isn't worth the paper it's printed on. You can tell anybody about anything you want to.
Well, anyway, I think we can get on to more positive stuff, like what works and what doesn't. And has anybody tried any of the Bach flower stuff that has been mentioned on podcasts lately? I guess, Dan, I think you have.
I've been familiar with the Bach flower remedies for years because of my work in homeopathy. Rescue Remedy is a very, very effective combination of five of them.
Yeah, I used some of that just before I logged on here, because I wasn't sure how things were going to go with it, and I was getting nervous, and I was thinking, oh no, what if nobody shows up? You know, all the thoughts that you kind of think about, and it just seems to have worked out pretty good.
I know people who have used Rescue Remedy with their guide dogs, and it works well.
Really? Do they end up using the same amount with animals that they do with people? Maybe they do, because it's just energy medicine, right?
Yeah, that's all it is. It's just energy. You just squirt a drop or fall in their mouth.
It's got alcohol in it, and even though you're only giving somebody four drops at a time of this stuff, does it have any kind of triggering effect on people who have alcohol problems?
The mother tinctures of the flower essences have alcohol. However, when you dilute those out to user strength, you're not getting, you know, a tenth of a percent of alcohol. I doubt that it would trigger anything with anyone. However, somebody who's, you know, afraid of it probably shouldn't use it.
Yeah, they seem to work really well. There was a book from Recording for the Blind that you could get on that subject, and I don't know how many tapes it is, but it probably isn't too many. It came out in 1979, so people can check that book if they're interested. In fact, there's a lot of books from RFB&D that are very informative about this kind of information. They have used to have a really good one called Nature's Medicines, and it was by Richard Lucas, and I don't know if they have that anymore, but it talked about the different legends regarding various herbs and their uses and how people use them over the centuries. It's just an excellent book.
Yeah, I read that some years ago.
In fact, NLS has got a couple of vegetarian cookbooks, and they've got one that was published by some people from Bastyr University back in 1991 or 92, and I think it's Encyclopedia of Natural Medicine or something. It's on 5 or 6 tapes, and let's hope that they have put that into digital format. It would sure be easier to find things in there, but it's remarkable, all the information they've got in that book. Has anybody found a good description of where the meridians are on the body? Because there have been some books that have been brailled recently. I don't know if they're in recorded form, but there was one that described Qigong, I think it's how you say it, and they mentioned the points, but they didn't say where they were. And it was so frustrating because you saw this list of all these different places, you know, the different names of them, but it didn't describe where they were.
That's one of the problems with good material and alternative therapies, is that very little of it is available either in Braille or in electronic form. I'm not a good enough Braille reader, so Braille wouldn't interest me, but I used to have several good print books that listed, outlined the meridians very clearly, the energy meridians, but finding something where the diagrams are clearly described, that would be a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, there was no clue of how the original Braille book was done either. I don't know if they actually had the picture in there or what, because I didn't see the hard copy Braille. I just got it electronically. That might be something we could ask Larry on the list, since I think the printing house brailled it. And how do they handle that kind of stuff?
Yeah, it would be nice if more things like that were available in formats that were usable by us.
Anyway, back to EFT, we were talking about that. Are you listening to the course now, Dan, or are you just kind of skipping around or what?
Oh, I'm starting from the top and going all the way down. In fact, Marcia had pulled all the files off onto her computer a few days ago. I just did it this morning, and there's just gaggles of them.
Yeah, it just goes on forever. It's amazing how much material is in that stuff, and it's all so affordable. He just charges a flat fee for each set. It doesn't matter how many CDs or DVDs are in there. The DVD prices are exactly the same as what I paid for the CDs. So I would imagine the quality is much better. The sound quality is really good for the DVDs.
Well, that may be. They're not hard to listen to. Marcia and I both enjoy him. He's quite a kick. One of the reasons that I got interested was because of the fees that he was charging. Not because I'm a skinflint, I am, but that's not the point. I have a lot of respect for somebody who wants to get the knowledge out there and is willing to charge just enough to cover their expenses and make a little bit. He deserves to make a little bit. And, you know, a workman is worthy of his hire. But it's nice to find somebody who's not trying to make a huge profit.
Yeah, he just seems to be really honest about what he does, too. I mean, it's like he's got a mission to get the knowledge out to anybody who will listen to him, and it's so easy to do, and quite often it works really well, although it doesn't always. I guess some of it depends on your intention and your emotional state at the time and whatever is you're concerned with, but he is really, really honest about what he does, and that's one thing I like about him.
We're having a fried cheese crisis here.
Fried cheese crisis?
Yeah, Marcia gets this cheese at the store that's made for frying, and you fry it up and you season it. It's really, really tasty. She accidentally put some of my Irish Blarney cheese in the skillet instead, and it will be very interesting. This is part of a holistic experiment, you see.
Actually, fried cheese tastes pretty good. I've never had the nerve to try it, to do it myself, but I've had it. Reminds me of college days when people just fry anything they think they want to, including bananas.
The college I went to, was supposedly run by a church that believed in good nutrition and good medicine, et cetera, et cetera. It wasn't a particularly good education. The cafeteria food was all vegetarian, and what a slumgullion of carbohydrates. Oh, my.
That sounds pretty typical of even veggie restaurants, even in California. You know, they do that, too.
I have a friend in Berkeley who brags on this vegetarian restaurant that does Indian food, says it's absolutely marvelous. I can't imagine Indian food without meat, but there's an awful lot of it, of course, because there are some large areas of India that are all vegetarian.
I've run into some Hindus who have said that, and they get all excited when you're vegetarian or thinking about it, because they go on and on about how nourishing and healthful it is, and how you're not supposed to eat eggs, and you know, all that kind of stuff. It's really interesting, their perspective on it. It's just, you can tell they've, at least some of them have really grown up with that concept.
Yeah, and they're dying like flies from diabetes, too, because Ayurvedic medicine has nothing to treat diabetes with. If they would stick to their traditional diet, it wouldn't be so bad, but they've adopted, or partially adopted, Western diets, and the combination of the two is deadly for them.
Yeah, that's true for a lot of people in Asia, and even in China, where they, you know, stuck to the regular diet for a long time. Now that Western influence has gone in there, it's a shame what's happening.
Looks like it's just you and I and Lisa Hall. Hello, Lisa.
Hi there. I'm just kind of listening in. I haven't really dealt much with holistic type foods. I know I always try to eat vegetables and stuff, but I don't eat salads or I don't eat very much meat. So usually I eat mostly vegetables, usually cooked, or the canned vegetables, like vegetable soups and stuff like that. Which they say is not always the best for your body.
Sorry, I had a mouthful of fried cheese.
You know, it's really hard to find veggies that aren't going to go bad really fast. Usually, I tend to stick with fruit because I can take a while to eat it, but with veggies, it's hard because the green stuff, you love it, but it wilts so fast, and it's just one of the big problems that single people run into. I don't know if there's any way around it, except to eat it all the day you get it.
Well, they'll keep for a couple of 3 days. They get the bagged salads, and they keep for 2 or 3 days, but yeah, they you have to pay attention to them or they'll go bad on you. You're single? I thought you were married for some reason.
Nope, I've always been single.
I've been single all my life, too, and I find that so many recipes nowadays are geared to 4 to 6 people, and it's hard to find recipes for 1 or 2 people.
Isn't that the truth? Even when you make a recipe that's for like 4 to 6 people, and you keep it in the fridge and you eat it every night, you get sick of it after about four days, and you don't want to see it again for a month.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and that, I mean, that's a real hard thing, and you know, there's not.
Hey, Crystal Hall has just signed in.
I suppose if I were had to look in the mainstream, you know, for different books, I'm sure that there would be some books out there, but as far as within the blindness area, there's only one book that I was able to pick up. It's Cooking for Two that I've purchased from American Printing House for the Blind, and I had recipes in there for 2 people, but I haven't had a chance to try it.
I have great difficulty in cooking for fewer than 4, so, you know, it gives you a chance to invite lots of people for dinner.
One of the big challenges, too, is that a lot of the stuff that you pick up from different organizations of the blind, which is kind of where I go to if I want to try to find something that's pre-marked or something so blind people can use it right off the shelf, is that a lot of the stuff that they offer, you know, they've got it a family size and you can't, like crock pots. For some reason, they used to sell crock pots, but they always chose the 4 or 5 quart variety, and I had to go to a regular store to get a 1 quart. And sometimes you want some vegetable soup or you want any kind of soup and you don't want a lot of it, but a 1 quart crock pot for that is really great because you can just kind of throw in 3 or 4 different things and some broth of some type and then just kind of let it cook for about 10 or 12 hours, and it works out really well, but it's hard to find small appliances like that.
The 1.5 quart crock pots have become popular again. People use them at parties to keep dips warm and stuff like that. I use mine for cooking brown rice with, but, you know, put the brown rice in when you go to bed. In the morning, got brown rice.
You know, I don't think, and I do have a small little crock pot, I guess you could say, but it seemed like it's very hard to find Braille cookbooks that would have crock pot recipes.
Oh, but you can find so much stuff on the web. You don't need a cookbook.
It's true.
Plus, you can adapt your own recipes. As Dan was saying, rice is really, really great in the crock pot because you just start it cooking and it just cooks and you just leave it alone.
Yeah, make split pea soup in the crock pot with ham. Yum. But Mary wouldn't do the ham part.
Now, one thing I've done in a crock pot is spaghetti and meat sauce.
An Italian soul would not want to do that. And I'm not even Italian.
One time for a Thanksgiving dinner with my family, I tried an experiment where I think it was rice and cheese and two or three kinds of winter vegetables, and I forget now what else, but it made a lot because I had to use the big crock pot for it, and I forget how long it cooked. I probably cooked for about 6-7 hours, but it came out really good. Some of the crock pots that they have come with baking pans, which is very intriguing because you try to bake a cake in one of those big round baking pans, it comes out really moist and really, really tall. I've never seen anything like that before because it was a moist heat.
I've heard of that. I've never tried it though. Well, I'm going to go away, you guys. Take care. Nice talking with you, and we'll do it again.
Okay, have a good one. Well, I think since Dan's gone and there's only two of us, I don't know if Hope is coming back. I guess I'll just stop recording and end this, but we went on for, goodness, had to be about 35-40 minutes, so that's pretty good.
No, not bad. I didn't come in on the very beginning, but I was listening.